नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Dasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the inspirer of his disciples who produced this section of the Bhagavatam. Nashtapayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्ति भवति नैष्ठिकी। By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotion to the Lord who is glorified in the best of songs is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 22nd day of September 2017 in Alachua, Florida, a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Canon 11, Chapter 13, text number 8, is it? 8?
Yes.
Sri Uddhava Huvacha Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayan Padamapadam Tathapi Bunjate Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajavat. Sri Uddhava Vacha Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayan Padamapadam Tathapi Bhunjate Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajavat Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayan Padamapadam Tathapi Bhunjate Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajavat. Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayam Padamapadam Tatkatam Svakarajavat. Sri Uddhava Huvacha Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayam Padamapadam Tathapi Bhunjate Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajavat. Sri Uddhava Huvacha Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayam Padamapadam Tathapi Bhunjate Krishna Ladies, Sri Uddhava Vacha Vedanti Matya Prayena Vishayan Padamapadam Tathapi Bhunjate Krishna Tatkatam Svakarajava. Sri Uddhava Huvacha Padanti matya prayena. Papa Bhunjate Krishna. Patkatam Swakarajada. Gandhi Mata. Shayam Padamapada. Papa Bhunjate Krishna. Patkatam Swakarajada. Okay, so we'll read together. Sri Uddhava Vacha.
Okay,
we're going to read together. Sri Uddhava said, Vedanti, they know. Matya, human beings. Prayena, generally. Vishayan, sense gratification. Padam, a situation. Apadam, of many miserable conditions. Tata, api, even so. Bhunjate, they enjoy. Krishna, O Krishna, tat, such sense gratification. Katam, how is it possible? Shva, dogs, kara, asses, aja, and goats, but just like. Translation, Sri Uddhava said, my dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future unhappiness, and still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one in knowledge act just like a dog, an ass, or a goat? Purport. The standard methods of enjoyment in the material world are sex, money, and false prestige, all of which are obtained with great suffering and eventually lost. One engaged in material life suffers in the present and has only a very bleak future to look forward to in the continuing cycle of birth and death. Thus, how can human beings who have seen these things and know them very well, continue to enjoy life like dogs, asses, and goats? Often a dog will approach a bitch for sex, but the lady dog may not be attracted, and will show her teeth, snarl, and threaten the poor dog with serious injury. Still, he goes about his business trying to get a little sex pleasure. Similarly, many times a dog risks being beaten or shot while stealing some food in a place where he knows he should not go. The ass is very attracted to the she-ass, but the lady-ass often kicks him in the legs. Similarly, the ass's master gives the ass a handful of grass, which the poor ass could get anywhere, and then burdens him with great loads. The goat is generally raised for slaughter, and even when the goat is brought into the slaughterhouse, he shamelessly goes after the lady goat to get sex pleasure. In this way, even at the risk of being shot, bitten, beaten, and slaughtered, animals persist in their foolish sense gratification. How can an educated human being commit himself to such a condemned way of life, wherein the result is practically the same as that of the animals? If by cultivating the mode of goodness one's life is filled with happiness, enlightenment, and future rewards, why would anyone cultivate the modes of passion and ignorance? This is Uddhava's question. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmidatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very pertinent question. It's not only pertinent for those who are deeply conditioned and are working in the material world in the ordinary way and suffering the results of sinful activities in the pursuit of sense gratification, but it's also very pertinent for us, because we may find that despite all the knowledge that we've been given and our experience in devotional service, even being initiated for many years, still somehow the habitual lurements of sense gratification impinge on our consciousness. And sometimes we find ourselves indulging things we shouldn't indulge in, and so forth. And how can that be? It's not only obvious from just ordinary life, but it's also abundantly clear from the Shastra that these kind of activities will slow our return back to Godhead, may even bring us back again for another round of birth, old age, disease, and death. So how could we allow ourselves to be so covered that we indulge in these things? So various shlokas impinged on my mind as soon as I read this verse and started thinking about it. And one of the ones that came to mind was in the 15th chapter, I forget the number of the verse, but Krishna is describing the transmigration of the soul. And he describes how after a soul leaves a certain body and he's due for another body, he gets shrotram, chakshu, sparshan, anksha, rasanam, granam, evacha, adishtayam, manishtayam, vishayan, upasevate. Now this word vishayan is important. It's in this verse and it's kind of a theme here. It's the object of the senses. So what Krishna is describing here is how in the next body that we get, even if it's an animal body, you get a certain series or a set of senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the touch, the taste, and so forth. And then he uses vishayan upasevate. Now this word upasevate is very interesting. I remember researching this word. I think Prabhupada uses the word engages in or enjoys. But I looked it up once, and in the dictionary, the Sanskrit dictionary, one of the definitions is becomes addicted to. And I think this is the key to understand the answer to this question, which Krishna will give in elaboration, and eventually the swan incarnation will answer. So what is addiction? Addiction is illuminated at the end of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this wonderful lust section, this section where Arjuna asks, what is it that causes one to act even against his own interest? This is exactly the topic here, right? What is it that forces one to act even though you know that it's going to cause you pain? So, of course, the answer is, all together, kama esha krodha esha rajogana samunbaha mahasano mahapap vidyenam hiyabhairinam. It's very dramatic. It's standing on a battlefield with thousands and millions of soldiers on each side. And Arjuna asks this question, and Krishna says, here's your real enemy. Not these enemies over there. Your enemy is in here. And it's, of course, lust, and which transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Right? Very pertinent. And then he goes on to describe how this kama, it covers the real knowledge of the living enemy to various degrees, right? You use the analogy of the smoke and fire, the dust on the mirror, like that. And then he says, avritam ganametena gyanino nitya vaidina kama rupena kunteya dushparena alenacha. So this is one of the keys to the answer here, that this material desire, when it takes hold of you, which means this strong desire to enjoy the objects of the senses headed by sex, but everything is included, it covers the knowledge of the eternal knower, the living entity. In other words, we're called the jnanina in that verse. Krishna says jnanina. We have this knowledge inherently in us, but it's covered to a large degree in the human form, and even more in lower bodies. There's no chance of awakening there. But in the human form, there's a chance of coming back to our real knowledge, or awakening our actual knowledge. But in here he's describing how that knowledge is covered. And even against one's will, even against one's better instincts or even understanding, one will engage in activity that keeps one buried in devotional service, it keeps one buried in material life, and produces suffering. So how does this work? Well, this lust is just like an infection. Think of this word addiction. It takes over the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. Indriyani mano buddhe rasyarshtana muchate etava mohayatesha jnanam avatadeena. That is just like I remember thinking of this, how this lust or kama takes over one's essential nature, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. If your intelligence is covered and your knowledge and your mind is infected with lust, then you're helpless. It's just like the analogy of the enemy. Think of that. I remember way back in 1990 when they had their first war in Iraq, you know. It lasted, 6 days? But the first thing that the United States did, they knocked out all the radar. They had some radar in Iraq. They knocked out all the radar, so there was no danger of them shooting down the planes like that. So the radar is like your intelligence, your senses, right? So immediately you become helpless. And then the enemy can easily take over. So karma infects the mind and the intelligence and the senses to a degree that your original knowledge cannot take over, even the obvious knowledge. In other words, the question here is that we see, just like in the case of the addict, right? You see that, yes, if someone takes this drug, I see this person is now 6 months down the road. And look how much suffering there is. So much addiction, so much misery, you know, they're fighting. Then why would I take it? You know? And so there's two sides. There's always this battle going on. And my higher intelligence is telling me, no, shun that completely. But my lower intelligence, fed by bad association, right, and other things in the mode of ignorance, because addiction is especially mode of ignorance, hard drugs, is pulling me toward taking it. And so the mind may play tricks. Well, I won't get addicted. You know, that won't happen to me. I'm just going to enjoy the fun of the drug, and I won't get addicted. And so this is the nature of Maya. She's always trying to trick us. She's trying to bewilder us into enjoying what is ultimately a trap. What does Krishna say? Yehi sansparjaja bhoga dukkha yona evate. I always thought this is one of the most revolutionary statements in the old Bhagavad Gita. That the very enjoyment that you get from sense gratification is the source of your misery. It's exactly what's being spoken of here. Now, knowing that, one should eschew that, right? And that's in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, therefore, the wise don't take part in that, because it has a beginning and an end. But the end of the enjoyment doesn't mean the end of the desire. That desire is planted in your consciousness to do again and again and again, even beyond death. It goes with you into the next life. This is what keeps us bound here. So it's a very cogent question. So now the answer that Krishna gives at the end of the third chapter is when one must strengthen his intelligence. Evam buddhe param buddha sanstat yapana matana jahishaptam mahabaho kamadupandarasana. Understanding with one's intelligence that one is transcendental even to the material intelligence, you know, one should control the mind by the higher self. In other words, the higher self has to be brought into controlling the lower self. These purports are so illuminating, it's worth reviewing them. So, and in this second chapter, there's also this wonderful series of verses where Krishna gives the direct answer to this question. Another verse that immediately came to mind after reading this verse, Jayate Obhishayan Bungsa Jayate Obhishayan Bungsa Sangas Teshu Jayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Trodu Vijayate Krodad Bhavati Sang Moha So Moha Smidivid Mas Bhuti Brangshad Buddhinasho Buddhinashad Sanashiti. So Krishna is giving a very graphic description there of the degradation of the soul, beginning with contemplating the objects of the senses. Now, what are we taught, you know, from the beginning in devotional service? Is that don't, especially in terms of sex life, you know, so many restrictions of separating man and woman, and even the, you know, you shouldn't sit with your daughter and so forth, and what to speak of, reading sex novels and so many things. Don't do it. You know, don't do it. This is contemplating the objects of the senses. And if you engage in that, then becomes frustration and anger, depression, because you can't enjoy. And then that covers your knowledge. Krodha bhavati sang moha, you become bewildered. And you forget everything. Sometimes, you know, this movement is now over 50 years old in the United States, or in the West, outside of India. And we've seen so many devotees who allowed, you know, after years of serious service and strictness and preaching and doing so many important things, somehow or other, allowing the desire for sense gratification to enter in again, to do offenses, bad association, who knows. And covers the knowledge to the degree that you can even flip over and think that this is the imaginary world, and out there is the real world. That's where real things are happening. Isn't it? We understand that that's the reflection of the real world, right? The whole material never. This is what Uddhava is saying here. This is, how could someone be so foolish to embrace illusion and give up reality? But it's so dangerous, and it's exactly the idea, the addict, or think of a drunkard, the alcoholic, You know, how does one fight that? I was never an alcoholic, but I in San Diego where we live up the street there's a Alcoholic Anonymous is well developed. So we had a fellow coming who was interested in Krishna consciousness, and he had been there. He invited me to come up. He wanted me to give an address. You know, he wanted me, but you know, more or less, it's like you have to say, well, I'm Dravidadas and I'm an alcoholic, but I couldn't really say that. You know, it had been like 45 years since I had a beer when before I joined. So, but I found that there's a lot of similarities, because why have a society, sangha? In other words, it brings this sangha. They have to recognize a higher power, right? They say, well, it doesn't have to be God. You know, it could be this. They try to make it as ecumenical as possible. But the idea is that you can't do it on your own. Just sitting in your room, you're going to fall prey again. It's stronger than you are, the addiction, right? It's stronger than you are. Exactly this point, that the overwhelming desire that you planted in your heart, you know, voluntarily, is now stronger than you, stronger than your intelligence. Your intelligence is telling you, and your body is telling you, I mean, this is just destroying yourself, but you can't stop it on your own. So you come together and you hear accounts of others who have, you know, they're now, I got this medallion, 6 months, I'm clean, you know, so it's possible to do it. And, you know, you talk together, you recognize the higher power, you pray, and sometimes you can give it up for some time. But every alcoholic knows, I can't go into a bar. I can't hang out with those people who I used to drink with. You know, I can't have one drink and think I can do it. That's what they call falling off the wagon. It means that the desires are there, and you have to be very careful about your association, and because you're not cured. You know, the disease is still in there latently. So a similar thing with devotional service. When we come to Krishna consciousness, it's just like being in rehab. Just like being in rehab. You have the association, you have so much knowledge that's given to you to strengthen your will, you see? And you're also given the higher taste. And this is the great advantage that the devotees have, that Krishna consciousness has. As soon as you chant Hare Krishna with some concentration, kirtan, hopefully, because kirtan also engages all the other senses. The feet are engaged, the dancing, the voice, the eyes of the deities and everything, the hands. This is a genius of Lord Chaitanya. This helps to give you the taste and give you the experience. So now I see, here's the alternative. And really, it's just like we have to become addicted to Krishna. Prabhupada even uses that word sometimes. He didn't use it. And this is why, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, again and again, hours, days, months, years, right? What's the whole idea? Is to awaken, and we know, awaken our taste for the name, which is the sweetest of the sweetest. Madaram madarebhyopi, mangalo, mangalebhyopi, you know how many verses do we, tunde, tandavani, ratinvatanate. Rupa Goswami gives the standard. Why do I just have one mouth to taste the sweetness of this holy name? You know, let me have millions of mouths. You can imagine what kind of taste that is, you know. I want ears, I want to have millions of ears. That means it's totally addicted to the holy name. Good. It's good. Addiction. That means totally cured for many. It's not even on the radar anymore. And that means that even while moving amongst the sense objects, the pure devotee, pure means pure of all these, the modes of nature, which we're discussing, there's no temptation. Now that's also given in the Bhagavad Gita right after these two verses. Raga dveshiva, everyone who knows, raga dveshiva muktaistu, vishayan indriyaischaran, atma vashya vidheya atma, prasadam adigachati. This is how to get the grace of the Lord. This is, so he's saying, raga dveshiva, being free from attachment and aversion. Because there's two sides of this, of addiction. Attachment and aversion. Even while moving amongst the senses, vishyanuri aishadan. In other words, being free, even in contact with them, what to speak of separate. How does this take place? Atma varsha, videyatma. Prabhupada's mortal translation of this. Accepting and practicing the, eternal principles of freedom? Regulative principles of freedom. Regulative principles of freedom. Now just see that, you know, you have to really wrap your mind about that. Regulative means not doing something, right? Holding back. But that gives you freedom.
There's a little paradox there, a little irony.
The regulative principles really give you freedom. Freedom from what? Addiction. Freedom from the bondage to the chained victimization, Prabhupada called it, of sense gratification, karma, birth and death. This is what the alternative is. So understanding these, now the result is you get the prasadam, right? Prasade savadukkanam hana rasyopajayate prasanna chetaso buddhi payavatisthate. This is the state of being transcendental to the modes of nature. So by this prasadam, you no more dukkha. Prasadam so dukkha nam hana is destroyed. Hana asobajaya prasanna chetasu, and your consciousness becomes clear. This prasanna means both joyful and clear. Very clear and joyful and peaceful. And your intelligence is fixed in Krishna. This is, after all, the whole context is how does one attain a steady intelligence, you may remember in the Gita. So the method we've been given, the science of bhakti, as taught by Rupa Goswami, following Lord Chaitanya and all of our acharyas, we've meant to be Rupanugas, it's very scientific, it's very systematic. And another verse that came to mind, the Upadeshamrita. It's exactly like that. Addiction is a kind of a disease. So Rupa Goswami says, Syat Krishna Nama, Charitari satapya vidya pittopatapatasanasya narochikanu pinpadadat anudinam kalusai vajishta svadri kumad bapaditan kadamula hantri. He's saying that the holy name, form, qualities, pastimes of Krishna, which are meant to be to occupy our minds, are sweet as anything. They're most tasty. But because the conditioned soul is suffering the disease of ignorance and illusion, it tastes bitter. Is bitter. But it's just like someone probably called the jaundice. Jaundice is actually the yellow condition that comes from hepatitis, but you understand. So just like for someone with hepatitis, sugar tastes bitter. Anything sweet tastes bitter. I remember I had a serious case of hepatitis once back in 1969, and I was hospitalized. And sure enough, you know, nothing tastes sweet to me. Everything, you know, I couldn't taste it. And gradually I was cured. So, but if one nicely chants anyway, this is the whole idea. This is why we're enjoined and instructed to chant the 16 rounds. We have to take a vow. Why do we have to take a vow? If it's sweeter than sweet, who would ever stop? Because we don't taste it as such. And because we need the discipline. And because our material mind is always telling, no, sleep a little later. Oh yeah, I got so many rounds and I'll do them tomorrow. You know, it's not so important, you know. Vow, okay, I love my guru, you know, he's for the deities, I should do it, you know, I have to do it. And after a while, it becomes, you must do it, you feel like, you know, this is advancement. So, why all that, you know, instruction? Well, this verse explains, because in order to be cured of the addiction to the lower things, which are so harmful, the poison, it's not an accident that the word vishaya, which means sense gratification, object of sense gratification, and visha in Sanskrit are practically the same word. Think about that. You can learn so much just from seeing from the dictionary. Visha, vishaya. I'll give you a verse for that. That's there also. So, because we need these rules and regulations, and we need vows, and we need initiation, and all of these things to keep us on the path of sadhana bhakti. Until we get to the point of where we're actually cured and we can actually relish these things freely. And this is the Bhagavatam again and again prescribes this. Another one of these shlokas that came to my mind, I think it's the end of chapter 2 in the second canto, the change of heart. It says, Pabanti he bhagavata atmanaksatam katam matam shabanaputesha sambitam punanti he vishayivadushatashayam vajanti tachadanasadoruhantikam. Does anyone, this name, verse ring a bell? It's such a sweet verse. Pabanti means to drink. To drink. What is he describing the drinking here? Katamritam. Pabanti he bhagavata atmanaksatam. To drink the nectar of katha about the Supreme Lord who is so dear to one, who is bhagavata atmanaksatam, who is one's very self. Katam shravanapateshu. How you drink it? Through the ear holes. Very simple. Shravanapateshu. And sambritam, and who is fully fulfilled and satisfied with drinking that nectar, then what's the result? Punanti ye vishayavadushatashayam. What a beautiful poetic phrase. It becomes, their hearts are completely purified of
Vishiyavidushatashiyam, Prabhupada says, the contaminated desire for sense gratification. Vidushita is dirt. It's vishiya, that's the desire for the object of the sense. Ashiyam, the heart is completely purified of this. And then what?
Vajanti tachadana sudo rohanti kam.
Such a soul goes back to the spiritual world and gets a place nearby the feet, lotus feet of Krishna. That's what it says.
So that's exactly what this whole movement is all about, is cultivating the desire for hearing about Krishna and chanting about Krishna. And from that comes all the other services.
It's all a context, really, for hearing and chanting. Isn't it Jiva Goswami who said the deity worship should always be accompanied by chanting of mantra and chanting of the holy name? So really all our services are centered on the sound. It emanates from the transcendental sound and our taste for hearing and chanting. So cultivating that, that's what the Bhagavatam is all about. The Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada was so adamant about that. He used to come to class. Where is so-and-so? Prabhupada is shopping for the deity. He said, what's he going to do if he doesn't hear the Bhagavatam? There's pastimes like that. You know, we should always maximize our schedule of studying, discussing, chanting, and kirtan also. The most pure form of this hearing and chanting, Krishna Katha, is kirtan. And it all begins there, right? The holy name is the sweetest of the sweet. But how to taste it that way? Well, I wanted to give you another verse that came to mind. And this is by Raghunath Das Goswami. It helps to hear how the great acharyas are appreciating the holy name, so that we can aspire to that. And we can say, well, I want to be in that state also, you know, so let me strive. You know, it always helps to look at the ideal like that. So he says in Stavavali, Radheti nama navasundada sidu mugdham, Krishneti nama madurabhata gara dugdham, Savakshanam sudabhiraga himena ramyam, Kritvat dhaiva tibame rasane chudarte. He says, I put in a little poem. An excellent fresh nectar drink with endless subtle tastes, such as the name of Radha, by whom all three worlds are graced. Condensed milk that is wonderfully delicious, thick and sweet, such as the name of Krishna, in whom all attractions meet. Now mix these drinks, O thirsty tongue, and add the cooling spice of love, a prize the wise will try to buy at any price. And then in every moment, drink this beverage most fine and make my heart supremely blissful, peaceful, and divine. This is Raghunath Das. So that's an ideal, you know. But we can pray for that taste. This is, you know, the acharyas have told us, the Namashtaka, there's two verses where Rupa Goswami is praying for more taste for the holy name. Especially the last verse is a tragic. Narada Vino, now you can hear, did Madhuri Pura come here? Madhuri Pura, Pallada Priya's son. His name comes from this verse. Narada Vino Jivana Sudhomi Niyasa Madhuri Pura, from Krishna Nama Kamam, Spudame Vasane Vasena Sada. I don't know if you're familiar with this verse, a beautiful verse. Anyone who wants all of these literatures, just write me, send you all PDFs and everything. They're all available. So here he says, if I can give an adequate translation. So Narada, oh holy name, you're the inspiration for the Veena of Narada. Narada Veena Jivana, the life and soul of the Narada's Veena. Sudhomi Niryasa Maruri Pura, you're a flood of sweetness, which is the essential and thick essence of the nectar, something like that. Narada, Sudhomi means waves of nectar. From Krishna Nama Kamam, if you please, this is an idiom, Kama means if you like, O Krishna. Krishna Nama Kamam, Spudameva Saneva Sena Sada, let my tongue ever feel ever increasing relish for chanting your holy name, for tasting chanting your holy name. So, we have to aspire for it, because everything emanates from that. Everything emanates from our desire to be Krishna conscious, our ability to relish Krishna consciousness, because that pleasure, that transcendental pleasure that comes from seeing Krishna's deity and doing all the services and especially hearing and chanting, that is the cure for the desire for sense gratification. That's the cure for kama. And it's so graphically described in Adi Leela chapter 4, the contrast you know, between karma and prema. You know,
Atman-driya-vritti-vancha,
very calm, Krishnan-vritti-iti-iccha-dare-prem-naam.
That karma and prema are closely aligned. They're both ardent desires, right? And they're compared to iron, karma, and gold, prema. They're both metals, but they're a world apart, right? So in this verse he says, the desire to satisfy one's own, or please one's own senses, is called karma. And the desire to satisfy and please Krishna's senses is prema. And of course it's in the context of describing the gopis and Radharani and the advent of Lord Chaitanya. So what looks like lust, and has even come to be known as karma, it says sometimes, amongst the gopis, really isn't what we know as lust. But why does it look like that? Because they're obsessed, you know, they're compelled, during the rasa dance, they're compelled to run out and serve Krishna as he wants to be served, to give him pleasure. They know that he wants to be with them, and he called them on the flute, you know. So this ardent desire, very powerful desire to please Krishna's senses, is pure prema. That's what we're aiming for. And it completely negates the desire to please our own senses. And you see that amongst the great devotees. That's one of the definitions of a real guru. Tasmat gurum papadeta jigyashu shrey uttamam shabde parechinishnatan brahman upashamashriyam. In other words, that upashamashriyam means completely devoid of any material desire. Steeped in the shastra and in the understanding and consciousness of the Supreme Lord, and completely free of material desire. This is the, you know, one of the definitions of real guru. So there's so many instructions here, but it's a battle that, you know, we fight every day. And it's the good fight. It's really this, where the sadhana lies, is in drawing our mind by the strength of the intelligence away from thoughts of sense gratification and placing it on Krishna. And doing that again and again till the taste awakens, as Rupa Goswami promises it will in the Upadeshamrita. And, so that it's just a constant, nectar. And that means everything we do, which is of course, you know, at the point of constant remembrance. This is what we're aiming for. If you're delighted with remembering Krishna, the same question, why would we ever stop? You know? It's because the mind is still, you know, affected by the modes of passion. And it has a tendency to forget. So like in the sixth chapter, it says the mind can be the best friend and the worst enemy. If you train the mind, we're trying to train the mind and the senses, the mind is the center of the senses, to always think of Krishna. Think of Krishna more and more and more until that constant remembrance. Then that is the platform of Sai Baba, steady ecstasy, relishing at every moment. And we saw that with Srila Prabhupada. You know, even though I'm at the age now, in fact, exactly when he came to America and started, 69. And, you know, the senses, the body is starting to go here and there, there's all of these defects, you know, you can't. So, the standard thing, materialist, is, oh my God, I'm becoming old, I can't enjoy anymore. You know, if you have some money, you'll spend any amount of money to keep enjoying so many drugs, you know, the what do they call it? The plastic surgery, whatever, you know, try to preserve that youth. I'm on a list, they know, you know. That, so every day I get things from this place called Stop Aging Now. Stop Aging Now. Like you can stop aging now. But, you know, they're ready to sell you so many potions, so many things. We have the cure, you know, we have it now. It's been, so they all end up in my, you know, in my trash. But we're really into that. Stop aging now, isn't it? By realizing you're an eternal spirit soul, ever fresh, ever youthful. Now, of course, the body's going to keep aging, but your consciousness can stay ever fresh. And we saw that with Srila Prabhupada. He was so enlivened when the movement finally took off. You can hear it in the lectures, those in the 1966 lectures. You know, when there's actually his own place, you know, 26 Second Avenue, he has a little crowd to speak to. His voice is cracking. You know, he's so eager to transmit this knowledge. And anyone who was there who experienced at the time will tell you he could hardly keep up with him. You know, in the morning walks and his activity and waking up at 12 at night and doing all, he was on fire and enlivened and blissful.
You know, the body wasn't dragging him down.
So that's the example we have. It's real. If we just had the books without the example, it would be theoretical. But we have the example of Srila Prabhupada, and it's even in this society there are devotees who, you know, display some of that. And the Bhagavatam is filled with it. And one final little verse I'll share with you. This one came to mind also by Kapiladev. And that is the definition of pure devotion. This may be familiar to some. Madguna shruti matraina mayi sarva guhashe manogati avichinna yata gangambaso badao. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Lord, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges falls naturally down toward the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows toward the Supreme Lord. So that's the characteristic of one. And we see, I remember reading about how Prabhupada would love to read the Krishna book, especially on Janmashtami. Hours and hours, you know, he'd just be in ecstasy. Everyone was falling out, you know, the sannyasi would be there in the room and all the dandas are going down. Prabhupada is just relishing chapter after chapter of Krishna book. His own words, Krishna, I didn't write these books. Krishna wrote these books. So, you know, that's the example we have, and we can cultivate. And the writings of the Goswamis, the beauty of the language. There's one other thing. Forgive me if I'm getting only over time. But yesterday I was discovering the songs, rediscovering some of the songs from the Gopal Champu. Jiva Goswami, you know, his incredible Sanskrit skill. And it was, here, this is what I wanted to share. This is a song. Just about little Krishna and little Balaram. It's based on Bhagavatam. It's all based on the Bhagavatam. And so this one line just sent me over the moon. It's described, here's the translation. Krishna and Balaram's faces are encircled by falling, curling locks of hair, make splendid lotus flowers surrounded by playful bees, wilt in comparison. Now that English is great, but listen to the Sanskrit. If I can chant it properly, Sanskrit is tricky. Skalad alaka ntuti balayita lapanau, alilalitam and lakamalang glapanau. Skalad alaka ntuti balayita lapanau, alilalitam and lakamalang glapanau. Let's try chanting that, you know, 10 times, understanding the meaning. And then there's a refrain, you know, and there's 10 verses here. And it just completely absorbs the mind. You know? And so the idea is, and one other idea, and then any questions or comments. We have in the sixth chapter, 20 to 23, Krishna describes samadhi. Remember that? And I always remember this phrase, buddhi grahama tindriya. One experiences this happiness that's beyond anything that you can imagine. Once achieving it, you feel there's no greater thing to be achieved. And but there's this phrase, buddhi grahama tindriya. So with transcendental senses, but grasped and understood with this transcendental intelligence. So the intelligence is key. And what I would suggest you do and try to do is that all that the verses that we go through and with so much ocean of nectar words that Srila Prabhupada has poured upon us, really try to understand the meaning of all of the Sanskrit things we sing, like the Guru Vashtika and the songs and verses. If you meditate on the meaning and you chant it a few times, this is exactly where the intelligence becomes enlivened and you're perceiving with your intelligence. Like this phrase, this little verse, if you actually see, you know, you see Krishna and Balaram, the baby crawling, you know, and their wonderful curly black hairs and the lotus, this is the whole idea. It's meant to implant in your mind the reality, because the sound vibration is non-different from the reality. Vinnatvanamanamino, right? The holy name is Krishna. So it's true of all of these transcendental vibrations. And when the intelligence is really strengthened and pure and Krishna conscious, then it'll be fixed on Krishna and you will be moving along nicely in advancement. Anyway, that was my ideas that came to mind on this verse. Are there any comments or questions? We can entertain them. Pran Govinda Prabhu. Do we have the mic active?
I recall Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's quote. He says,
here, hold it, yeah.
Vairagya Vidya, Mahaprabhu came to teach Vairagya Vidya.
Yes.
So he says, with renunciation is meant to be a transition between aversion and devotion.
Now, between what and devotion? Hold it close so I can. Go ahead.
With renunciation,
yes,
meant to be a transition between aversion and devotion.
Okay. Aversion, devotion, right.
So you mentioned about aversion, but generally we discuss so much about the attachment where pure devotees' emotional investment in Krishna and uninvestment from material sense of object are generally illuminated and explained.
Yes.
But as for the aversion, not so much discussion,
yes,
but it is as important as, and especially for us.
Yes.
We're trying to get out, but the emotional investment is still there.
Yeah.
So can you speak?
Yes, to... yes. So that it's a raga dvesha. In other words, that raga dvesha vimuktaisu. So the aversion is just the flip side of the attraction. And aversion is means that, oh, this person, this thing is going to cause me pain, or I don't like it because I have experience. Maybe that, you know, this person doesn't like me or whatever, you know. And that's also in the mode of passion. There's so much, when you study the Bhagavad Gita, there's so much described. Sukha dukha samay kritma. And not just, you know, sukha kritma, but sukha dukha samay kritma. One has to be equal poised in the dualities, to rise above the dualities. And therefore, it's good training. It's good training to put oneself in a situation where tolerance is called for. That's why, you know, compassion and tolerance go together. Compassion means, oh, I have this treasure of this transcendental knowledge. Let me give it, you know, to someone who needs it, you know, who doesn't know anything about Krishna. That's the preaching mood, right? But as Prabhupada said, you know, and it's obvious, they don't want it. People are not spontaneously attracted, and they'll insult you, or they'll especially ignore you. And this is a blow to the false ego. So that's like strengthening one's tolerance muscles if one goes on and is inspired by the idea, but they need it. It's just like the doctor approaching the person with the high fever. He's mad and he thinks the doctor is an enemy, and he slaps his hand away and he insults him. And the doctor, what does he do? Does he turn on his heel and walk out, or so he doesn't deserve it? No. He says, okay, somehow or other we have to administer this, this medicine. So both have to be dealt with, and especially the aversion is difficult in the society of devotees, because the sadhu sangha is meant to be our lifeblood. Really, it starts with that. But we all know, yes, I like to be with this devotee, and this devotee I'm going to try to avoid, you know, like that. But really, we need to be tolerant and not take. What's called take umbrage. I don't know if you know that. Take umbrage. If someone insults you or just doesn't speak to you or somehow or other, that's an offense which will damage your taste for the holy name. How do the reactions to the offenses come? Suddenly the sweetness of the holy name isn't there. And what's coming to your mind? Oh no. Why? Because chanting the holy name is a prayer to Krishna. I want to serve you. That means I want to get back in your good graces. I want to, you know, I want to feel your love for me and so. But Krishna loves all the devotees. And as soon as you have some enmity toward a devotee, even if you don't speak it, or heaven forbid, you know, do something physical. But if you're disliked, then that damages your relationship with Krishna. That's what the offenses do. So it's, both the attachment and aversion have to be there. And that's why I remember when we first joined the ashram, oftentimes the first, services, Bhaktitam, it's your turn to clean the bathrooms. And that may be the whole week where you clean the bathroom. So then there's the moment of truth, you know. Am I going to do that and curb my false ego and do that, or am I going to bloop or become a guest? Says, okay, you know, I'll do it, you know. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. So the idea is that there's aversion to it. The other example is, you know, in the ashram, It's winter time. I remember when I joined, it was March. It was still plenty cold in New York. And was there even any hot water in those showers? I don't remember. Anyway, if there was, that was verboten. So, not too much. I came right after they told me there was no heat in the whole temple and everyone was going to Mangalarti when they were full clothes. I missed that, thank God. So then the moment of truth, you know, are you going to surrender and take that freezing cold shower, or are you going to, you know, become a guest? So I said, okay, I want to, you know, so, and I used my little yoga technique, rapid breathing. If you ever need this, remember. If you do the rapid breathing, it's a heating breathing, you don't feel any cold. You know? So I took my 17-second shower, and I'm saying, I'm a great yogi. I'm ready to go to Mangalarti. You know? But it's like that. All the things that you can go through that are that your aversion, but you stay Krishna conscious and you that strengthens your muscles. And if you can stand those, then you'll be less likely to be attracted to the pleasurable things. It's two things. Tolerance is tolerating the suffering, pains, we're very familiar with that, and also tolerating the allurements that Maya throws at you, and remaining fixed on Krishna consciousness, correct consciousness. Yes, Prabhu?
Bhishma, when he was a young man, he got the name Bhishma because he took a what's called terrible vow, and that's actually what Bhishma means, terrible vow. And that terrible vow was that he would not marry anytime. He was totally renouncing for the rest of his life marriage and therefore sex life, any sex. So it was considered by people of the time that this was a terrible vow, so they called him Bhishma. And then, of course, we also know that in the Kali Yuga, the order of sannyas is forbidden for people in general because people can't keep it. The vow of celibacy. So if you can't keep it, why take the vow, you know, and eat vomit. So, you've spoken about the ideal situation that one can come to through, you know, that by gradual advancement, we can eventually get to the stage where we can actually fully lose our taste, or come close to that.
Yeah.
For sex life and fully engage in devotional service, and this is undoubtedly extremely important. But I guess, you know, the question would be, for people who are, you know, not brahmacharis, not sannyasis, who have taken the vow for preaching, should we really think, you know, that, I mean, we have the, you know, marriage, which is a license for a certain amount of sense gratification. This verse, people are described very badly, but it's, you know, people who are totally unregulated.
Yeah.
So what about for devotees, young devotees who are, you know, in prime of life, for whom the complete suppression of sex desire would be very, very difficult?
That's why
should they be troubled?
That's why, as you say, we have the Grihastha ashram, and it's supposed to be an ashram. I mean, you can't really compromise, you know, Prabhupada's, you know, we have to always go back to the lodestone of Prabhupada. This is what he wanted for this movement and what he wanted for his disciples. So there is the Grihastha ashram, and it's meant to be like a fortress in the sense that it's meant to protect you from going out and letting the senses run wild, you know. So it's very much dependent on how much how much ashram you bring to the griha. In other words, okay, you know, we have to make this, the house a temple. No, we can't have that. We can't have that. We should have this. It's a battle because as you say, it is a certain license for some sense gratification. But I think it's. You know, I can't speak from experience. I never went through that. But it's there are so many wonderful grihasthas who've done so much wonderful service, and that must mean that they're staying strong in Krishna consciousness. And today there's many, many. So it's possible to do it without, loosening and getting, you know, loosening the laws and the rules and regulations. But yes, for our younger devotees, we should encourage them to do that. But the thing is, it's founded, and this is what I understand Prabhupada wanted, it's founded on also, and this was the way it was in the early days, because I have experience of that, of also strict following the, you know, the morning program and the chanting and the rounds. Otherwise, there's no way you can have the strength to really stay strong in the ashram. So the real key is that householders who are doing that and are strong can advise the youngsters who are coming into the household ashram. They need good examples. And that's the way, you know, things can go on in that direction. But admittedly, yes, it's very hard. And this Kali Yuga, and, you know, we come to the movement already damaged in many ways. You know, but the kids who, the youngsters who grew up in the movement, oftentimes they don't have nearly as much of that, right? They've grown up and their parents have been, you know, practicing devotees. So they have a great advantage, but still I have to struggle it's a fight every day. It's a fight every day to hold off Maya and take shelter of Krishna and enter into prayer. It's not easy. It's just, that's what it takes. But we have so many advantages, including this wonderful temple and the deities. Okay, it's come to 9 o'clock. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Bol. Thank you for your attention.